Welcome to the suburbs with Andy and Greg.
So at Bay Village, where my parents live, they've done a recent multi-million dollar remodeling, and they have a new walk-up restaurant and a new bar.
It's called the Shrimp Trawler?
It is not called the Shrimp Trawler. The restaurant's called the Rusty Nickel.
The Rusty Nickel. Yeah, they tried Rusty Nail, and everybody got in line for a tetanus shot.
And it's N-I-C-H-O-L, because that's the owner's name.
Oh, my gosh. Are you kidding? Go figure.
Everybody's quite upset he named the bar after himself, but he is the CEO, so I guess he has bragging rights.
Not a stadium.
No, it's not a stadium. It only cost him $35 for naming rights versus $35 million. Now they have, to Jennifer's liking, they have a Prosecco.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about sandwiches.
No, Prosecco keg.
Keg.
That pours Prosecco.
She and Keely would get along great there. They could just sit there and swap stories all day long. We could pour them into the Rusty Nickel and have a chicken sandwich.
Talk about keys and earrings. Chicken sandwich. So she was like, oh my God, I got to get me one of these.
Oh yeah. There you go. So like in a dorm fridge?
Yeah. So she was very pleased to see the hot and cold running Prosecco they had.
There you go. There's a drink where you mix some other reddish-colored liqueur with Prosecco, and you get some kind of fancy breakfast drink.
Not a Shirley Temple.
No.
That's what Jimmy Reiser drinks.
Is it?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And when we go to restaurants, beer, wine, Linda, wine, Jimmy, Shirley Temple, please.
How about an iced tea or something?
Shirley Temple.
Weird.
He wants to pretend drink. You know, when I fake smoke, I use those chalk cigarettes.
That's like the no alcohol beer. No.
That's what my brother-in-law drinks.
Why? I mean, it tastes like a hoppy, bad beer. You don't sit there going, yummy.
Would you like a second one? No, thank you.
No.
I'll have a glass of milk.
Yeah.
I'll have what she's having.
Some guy sneaking out the back door. So when I'm on the water, there's this whole set your soul free kind of feeling I have. You know, you got this big sky, you've got the sound of water, which is
tranquil, yeah, placid.
It's re-energizing, renewing.
Kind of like with the ocean waves. They can be the same way.
Something happened to him.
Are you talking about 10-page letter, Scott?
Right. He was a really good sales guy. Then all of a sudden, like the switch flipped and he just became this angry dude. And it was just like 8 hours of anger. And I would come home, and I'm like, you are not going to believe what this day was like. Keely was like, move him to the balcony. Yep. You need to move him to the balcony. In the 10-page letter, he hated every bit of our existence together.
Newsflash, I hate you.
P.S. And you know that fishing net that I sold you with the boat and charged you the full retail price when you wanted to buy the boat off of me? I want that back. Would you like it up your ass? So anyway, we would go up to Ely, Minnesota. I would make all of the dinners like chili, all these things that you could just heat up so we didn't have to take time cooking and we could just be on the water.
It's all about fishing.
All about fishing. And he decided this one time that we were up there that was going to be his time to quit smoking.
Perfect.
And he was like a 2 or 3 pack a day smoker. I haven't been addicted like that to anything, but apparently it causes quite a bit of angst. For the entire time that we were up there, he wanted to burn the world down.
You become an angry bird.
He already was. So this
angrier bird.
Throw gasoline on the fire and then hit it with something else explosive, and that was him. And so I was getting a little bit tired of the anger, and it would be over something stupid like weeds on his hooks. And so fish behavior is really interesting. It's like a puzzle that you have to solve each day, and it's based on high pressure, low pressure systems, time of the year, water temperature, transition zone between rocks and weeds.
I just thought it had to do with whether you had a worm on your hook or not.
That would be a no. And so if you let your bait fall to a certain count, if you counted it down to 8 and started reeling it in, that's where all the fish were. I am slaying these smallmouth. It's just like watching the fishing tournaments where they've edited all those hours where they weren't catching anything. And all of a sudden, it looks like they're just
hauling them in.
Yeah, that's what it was like. And he was catching nothing.
He wasn't counting to eight.
He wasn't counting to eight. And he's like, what color spinnerbait is that? Black. What kind of twister tail do you have on there? Motor oil. I've got all of that. You just like, you could, I'm waiting for him to throw a clot.
Aneurysm.
On the drive back, I said, so, you know, when I was catching all those smallmouth and you didn't catch any? And he goes, yeah, I was counting it down to eight. And I didn't tell you that.
Oh, you didn't even tell him the secret. Should have told him 10.
Yeah, I should have.
All the fish are down here.
The whole thing was, he cared. I don't care. I don't care. If you catch more than me, it's still fun.
Not a contact sport.
It's not a contact sport. Vegas isn't placing odds on how many largemouth bass you catch. It's just supposed to be fun.
Even in the fishing tournaments, they cheat.
So wait a minute. Even in the fishing tournaments?
Yeah, those guys will load the fish with lead so they weigh more.
So you're watching fishing tournaments on TV?
I have been known to watch a fishing tournament.
Have you?
Yeah.
So is that just like the day where you're eating those wavy chips and you got nothing going on? Did you have a hangover from the night before or something? If you're watching fishing tournaments on TV,
you guys had all those patches on their shirts. They look so badass.
Got a man crush on the guys with patches on there. Is that why you like racing? Because of the driver suits?
You're connecting all the dots. That's why I was an Eagle Scout. I had a lot of patches.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know you were an Eagle
Actually,
Scout.
Actually, one merit badge short. I've told a lie.
So was it like that last project you didn't get to?
It was just school and life were getting in the way, and I just dropped out. My troop was at a different church, and I was more involved in my church's youth program at the time. And so I was going to another church for scouts because my across-the-street neighbor was the scoutmaster.
He didn't happen to be a dermatologist part-time, did he?
He did ask me once if I had anything south of the border and he had looked at.
Priests and troop leaders, I think, have a
stigma. Years ago, Heather and I were driving down Westfield Boulevard heading in toward Broad Ripple, and we saw a friend of ours, PJ, and he fishes in the White River there. Heather was young and fascinated, and so she was like fishing, and she's trying to drop her line into some rocks, and another car pulls up, and it's our friend Steve.
Steve?
He comes down, and hey, what are you doing, Heather? We're fishing with PJ, and Steve casts out, apparently hits a fish in the mouth with a hook, and pulls it up, like the first cast. And we've been there an hour, doing nothing.
See? He found the transition. Position zone.
Clearly, he hit it square on with the hook.
It was yawning at the time.
Bored by watching us not catch fish. Okay, I'm done.
So I was working a club in Corpus Christi, Texas. I was working with a friend of mine, and I said, well, we should go deep sea fishing here. He's one of these guys that can talk people into anything, and he knew that I knew fishing.
Like a carnival barker.
He's a good schmoozer. We're staying at this really nice hotel, and the club is downstairs in that hotel. And so they've got all these fishing charters up on this board near the desk. So he said, you read these, you figure out which one is legit, and I'll talk them into letting us go for club passes. And I said, deal.
Sure.
I found the one. They talked about fishing structure, which is exactly what I was just talking about here. He calls them up. He talks them into letting us go. And so we go out, and like, it is a 2-hour boat ride just to get to the place where we start fishing. He found out as soon as we left the pier, he gets seasick. He didn't know that.
Newsflash. I don't feel well.
Newsflash, I'm throwing up. And we've got shows that night. That's a lot of being in the sun. To all of a sudden come out and go, hey, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to be funny. So we go out there, and there's a pass the hat. Somebody's going to end up winning money. No patches involved. Sorry about that.
Deep sea fishing merit badge.
Yeah. Or professional angler.
He got the vomiting merit badge.
He did. Yes, he did. He's laying in the cabin with a wet towel over his head. I'm from Indiana. We don't have an ocean here. So I'm sitting there like, okay, we've got to be fishing structure on the bottom. So this is going to be like jigging for northern. So I'm going to put the bait on the bottom and then pump it up and down so that it looks like a distressed fish. All of a sudden, just blam, it hits my line. And I have got this fish on, and I am fighting it. And so the guy comes over to me, and he looks at it, and he goes, you've got the bottom. And I go, no, I don't have the bottom. Dude, I was raised on a lake. I've fished my whole life. I know what a fighting fish feels like. I do not have the bottom. And he's like, arms crossed, waiting to show this stupid tourist
from Indiana
that he's really got the bottom. And I pulled up a 25-pound red snapper. He looks at me and he goes, well, we might as well all go back. You just won the kitty. How do you know? And he goes, oh, look, man, that's like close to the state record.
Wow.
Chip recovers from vomiting enough to come out and catch a 4-foot hammerhead. And so I'm periodically going back to that guy going, am I still in the lead? You don't even need to come back and check with me.
Quit bothering me. Here's the money.
Right. Well, he just caught a 4-foot hammerhead. And he's like, sharks don't count.
Ooh.
Man, have you ever had shark?
No.
Oh, man, is it good. Soak it in buttermilk and then grill it. Oh,
is so it good. Similar to chicken knuckle soup?
Chicken knuckle soup is delicious.
I keep hearing that.
As we get back and we're doing the show, every audience has a different personality. I don't know whether it's the same in music.
Oh, yeah. Bands on any different level are going to have the energy of an audience will be different from night to night.
I'm doing this show and we're on a journey together.
Mm-hmm.
I'm loving it. They're loving it. And all of a sudden, this guy in the middle of my set, bounding up on stage.
Join the act.
He comes right up to me, and all of a sudden it's a duo, and he is swaying like a swing in the wind. And he goes, I got a joke. What's the difference between theory and reality? And I go, well, in theory, I'd be doing this show by myself, but in reality, I've got your drunk ass up here with me. Crowd goes crazy. I mean, he just happened to softball me
here.
The best gift in the world. And he looks at me and he goes, no, that's...
You're wrong.
And he doesn't even have the correction out of his mouth, and the bouncer's up there and gets him. And as the bouncer grabs him, you can see his date get up and leave in disgust.
His former date.
And so at that point, then I go on and do the rest of my set, and Chip has recovered enough from vomiting all day on the boat that he's going to headline. So it was a win-win.
Sure.
I win with the 25-pound red snapper, and then I win with the drunken dude.
How much did you win? What was the kitty?
$200. I bought a cooler. They packed it with the fish. I duct taped it closed.
And rode her bike home with it on the back. What's that smell?
I think that's a Lynyrd Skynyrd song, isn't it? You've given me this microphone.
Lent you.
Yeah. Right. It's good to know that now.
Because it's on eBay.
Ignore the Greg I etched into the powder coating on it.
I saw one on eBay that said Greg scratched into it.
So when you're recording people, you're furnishing all the microphones, or do you have people that actually believe their microphone is better than yours? I know they're bringing their instrument, probably.
Rarely in the studio does somebody bring a microphone, but there was this band that we recorded. It was this death metal band. The drummer came in with his big drum set, and he had all of these skulls mounted on the drum set.
So he sets up the drums, and then he sets up the skulls, or are they like permanent?
Kind of permanently part of the drum kit.
Wow.
And so we're in there trying to get the microphones set up properly in the drum set, and I had to say to the drummer, can I move a couple of these skulls out of the way so I can get the microphone where I need it?
You couldn't like run it through the jawbone?
No. This is the first time I think I've ever asked a musician that question.
Could we have a little less skull in this?
And the singer in this band actually had his own microphone, and he ran it through some effects pedals and then added the pedals into the mixing console.
Just to make him sound more evil?
Basically, yeah, it was their thing. They had bought this 12-hour package, and they were going to do an album in 12 hours. Seems like a pretty
ambitious
undertaking, but they thought they could do it.
How many takes do you get?
That's a great question, because as they started recording, red lights are on, and away they go. They start just wailing away, playing these intense songs. The singer's just screaming what might be lyrics. Then they would stop. And then they would start again. And then they would play for 3 or 4 minutes and then stop. And then start again. It maybe went on for 15 minutes. And then they finally stop. And the engineer says, so what was the name of that song? Well, that was 3 songs. Just blazing through these, like one take of everything.
Wow, one take.
Got to get done in 12 hours, you know.
Quantity over quality.
In the mixing, they just would get kind of a good rough mix, and they would put just enough compression on the mix that the vocal would stay on top, kind of mixing on the fly in real time. Having to tell the drummer to move his skulls was a great way to start a session.
That just sounds like something from Spinal Tap.
It nearly was. They also had this big concert bass drum. This other guy, he was the bass drum guy.
That's his whole gig, his bass drum?
And some percussion.
Borrows the Purdue marching band drum.
Yeah, but he played it with an axe handle.
Did he really?
Beating the drum with an axe handle. The lead guitarist
had his dead mother with him.
She was in the car.
Don't mind the flies.
Well, anyway, he had this amp, and then he had another amp cabinet that had a light in the back of it, and when he'd step on a pedal and it would like have this cut out of like the middle finger, he would like backlit this fake speaker cabinet, flipping you off when he was playing.
In the recording studio. That just like give them the juice to put it up to 11?
They were a caricature of themselves, basically.
Uh-huh.
But taking it very seriously.
I guess. I mean, you rip off 3 songs in 15 minutes. Well, rip off isn't the right word, probably. Pound out.
Yeah, there you go. So they got their album done in 12 hours.
They did. Okay, so let me ask you then, was quality sacrificed to get it done in 12 hours?
It all sounded the same, really. So once you get right. one song sounding good, they're all going to sound good. To them.
Nice caveat. So you've got your listening room and new music comes out and you're listening. Do you ever not make it through a CD because all the songs sound the same?
Nowadays, with the short amount of attention spans we have, we get more into individual tracks or playing a favorite song. Usually you listen to stuff that you're familiar with. You're used to what it sounds like and enjoy how it sounds. I'm sort of my own worst enemy when I'm listening to music because in my brain I'm...
You're mixing?
Thinking about or picking apart or wondering about how they did this or that. Or
I do that when I watch movies.
My engineer or producer brain is always thinking about how it came together instead of just enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with watching movies, trying to find mistakes or continuity errors or just little things that, like, you know, from a video editor's perspective that you're trying to eliminate stuff like that. And Jennifer's like, you're always ruining movies because I'm always pointing out the inconsistencies.
So you're not just staying within your mind. You're critiquing for Jennifer's.
I'll say, roll that back, watch. And they'll like, the jacket's on and it's off and it's back on again.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff like that. Little continuity things that people are paid to keep track of that stuff.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of their job.
Right.
Keeping take sheets and knowing how people look or how they're dressed.
Somebody was eating a sandwich during that.
In the editing bay, they're saying, oh, no one's ever going to notice.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, when we watch movies, as soon as the movie starts, Jennifer's up and out of the room.
Really?
She doesn't make it past the first lion roar, and she's gone.
Really?
Where are you going? I'll be right back. We just started the movie.
So then you're hitting pause?
And she comes back. She goes, I know. It's 22 years. As soon as you hit play, that button's attached to her. Gone.
Is she getting popcorn or something?
Sometimes, or who knows. It's a natural reaction to leap out of the bed. As soon as she hit play, MGM line is roar.
Yeah.
Boom. Right.
Off to get a Mike and Ike's.
Yeah. Or an orange milkshake. The movie we started and Jennifer refuses to finish.
So you got to wait till she goes out and walks Gabe and then you watch like 15 minutes of it?
It was the Barbie movie.
Oh, okay.
So $1.4 billion worldwide. Box office on this thing.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's set every record imaginable.
Which is kind of weird.
Even created a worldwide shortage of that PMS color paint.
The pink?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They had to go to the manufacturer in China and make them...
Add more lead to that.
Fire up the paint machine because they'd found all that colored paint in the world and needed more to make the sets.
Crazy.
You know, we got about 30, 40 minutes into it, and she's like, okay, I can't stand this anymore.
Ever.
Ever.
She put the ever in. She threw down the gauntlet.
Yep.
With Barbie. Did she play with Barbies?
She did. Yeah. Heather did. Yeah, Heather was a big Barbie person.
My kids would, like, cut Barbie's hair, and then they're like...
Butch Barbie.
Yeah, I guess. Skipper's really her special friend.
Yeah. I don't know. Over the years, since I started in the business in 1981, there's countless stories that I remember and countless stories that I've forgotten. Some stick in your mind, and one of them was, I remember a client was at the lodge, and he was doing a mastering session with one of the engineers, and my office at the time was right next to the mastering room, so I kind of would pop my head in and just visit with the clients and stuff.
You were the master of the domain.
All these hip-hop clients that we had all thought that they were all Jay-Z or better.
What's the percentage of... possibility there?
0.001.
Okay.
Very low. So Corey's working on this tune and it's dreadful.
How do you really feel?
Well, the guy says to Corey, hey man, what do you think? And Corey says, well, you know, for a demo it's pretty good. A demo? This ain't no demo, this is radio ready, man. Pushing back to Corey, he's like, oh, now what do I say?
Right.
It's his best way he could say, this sounds terrible. For a demo it's pretty good.
Your parents must be proud.
Parents would be proud of this number one single. Ain't no demo.
Hi, this is Andy. If you enjoyed listening to our podcast, please be sure to subscribe and share. Remember, laughter is contagious. Help us spread it by telling a friend.